All right. So let's get into this. The revolution in soil microscopy. What are you talking about, Matt? There's a revolution. I'm talking about that fact that there's a revolution. And so you're like, wait, no, not that kind. Not a bad kind. A good kind. Like there's a technological revolution that's going on and other things too. But literally, the microscope has gone from this scope with a lens on it to a scope with a light below it. To then sophisticated forms of light, to cameras capturing the control, the dimmable lights, then to new types of actual lighting, the new frequencies, new wavelengths, new camera quality. Everything has gone through the roof. People wonder why my pictures are so hyper clear. Because of that microscope that's last in this iteration, I believe it is the new industry standard because clarity is the quality of your interpretation when you're literally trying to see things better to identify them or categorize them. Probably a better way to put it for some of these things. Because you can assuredly ID some things, but some things, they look alike for a reason. So we'll get into that. I mean, in nature, you know the same thing. You're like, well, these things all look alike because they're trying to respond to an environmental stressor. Yeah. So keep that in mind. But microscopy is so powerful and it's never been more accessible. Like, you guys can have access to materials and tools that only universities had access to. Now, you can have get it. You can get it. And it's more affordable than it's ever been. Right now, my students have a 45% discount on my setup. It's crazy, way more than I got. So they can get so much money off of this. It's almost half off. So, and it's never been as powerful because of a bunch of things I'll talk about today. But it's never been as powerful in the technology side. But also what we know. So the interpretation combined with the technology, it's exponential growth time. We're in a revolution. And I would say like a renaissance, but there's nothing to renaissance from. We're not like going back to like ancient Greece and Roman bringing back classical, like there's nothing to bring back. Like the reality is it's like what we're discovering now is going to change everything. But wait, before I go any further, who am I? I'm Matt Powers. I am an author, an educator, an entrepreneur, a soil expert, seed farmer, and family guy. And I've written all those books there. I'm also a citizen scientist, too. And you're probably asking yourself, how did that last part happen? Because I mean, I get like you're a teacher, you write books because you're teaching with the book. Citizen scientist, right? Well, hold that thought for a minute. Let's come back to that. What makes a citizen scientist, right? So, we're going to do scientific observation. We're going to use a scientific method. We're going to gather data over time. And we're going to use professional methods, tools, and interpretation. There's nothing to stop you from doing that. And much more than what we're talking about today, science itself is this. And so you may be like, oh, well, I've got a really like high grade tool and it's like super easy to use and it does, and I use it regularly. Is that scientific observation? Yes. Like that's the thing is our tools are so good now that if we bring in the rigor, we can contribute to the whole in such a way that it truly is citizen science. So, and there's so many tools like this out now. So like let's say for soil though, you observe your soil and compost, you test throughout the season and compile your information. And I'll let maybe on this R soil database, you use a microscope as an assort and an assortment of home tests. And the reason is because, you know, people are putting out compost and never thinking about the pH of the compost and how it affects what's going on already in place. This is one of the most important things and so simple. My job is almost always to bring clarity and help people like clear their minds and see what they already know through the muddied water that is the current situation. Yeah, the online's wild. The information out there is also pretty darn wild, even in published books, you know. And so it's like really important that we create replicable and transparent patterns so that we can work this out and get the information to each other properly. Because there's so much of misinformation, it's wild. They really want you to be able to just, well, not be able, they really want you to only be able to buy a solution to something instead of regenerating and designing systems that provide an abundance. And so you have very truncated science in most places that's, you know, easy to get. And the stuff that's online is very muddied. And so we really need this database in so many more ways than one. You use a microscope, use an assortment of tests. That clarity that comes from that will guide how you use your compost, how you treat your soil. It's micro to macro. It's hands-on. It's pragmatic. That's what I teach. And the funny thing is, it's like, that's just what nature is. That's just what, and like all of our ancestors, like fundamentally, like understood a lot of this stuff. And it's really now about us getting to like re-respect the natural cycles as a whole. And because we've got the amazing tools, we can see all the nuance of good, better, best, which it's going to be unbelievable. So you take action based on the test results and your interpretation with all of this. And it's easy. I mean, that's what the Regenerative Soil book is a reference designed for. That's why it's so popular. And then in feedback with nature, in feedback with community over time, sourcing multiple perspectives, taking informed action. So this is what you're doing at each of those steps. So let's look back. You observe your compost. It's in feedback with nature. You are compiling in a publicly transparent way or sharing your information over time. That's feedback with community. You're looking at not just your microscope, but also pH and the nitrogen and the phosphorus and the salinity, because there might be salinity in your water that you're getting, you know, out of your well. Be careful. You can salt your ground very easily. People do this. And so you want to keep track of all that, right? And so you're sourcing multiple perspectives. You're keeping an open mind. You're letting the information speak for itself. You're not imposing upon things. You're receiving and listening. This is science. I know that in the past few years, we've had like some crazy things attached to the word science happen, but science is still science. And you know, Harvard, you know, studies continue to be shown to be faked and all these crazy things eroding all of the work that they've done. And it's really, really worrisome and terrible in one regard, which is true. And we're mourning the loss of that in some ways. But the flip side is you can't tell me what to do with my body or, you know what I mean, or my soil, obviously, because you don't know what you're talking about. You're faking results. And so we really need to have that open mind. We need to be working with community. We need that transparency to actually move forward. We're in a unique position where we're like, yeah, that happened. Yeah, this is happening. Yeah, their whole system's messed up. I mean, just look at the fact that we're looking at university science on soil and it's managed by graduate students at the university extension centers, you know, not generational farmers, people who are just trying to get their thing and then go to the next level, you know what I mean? Or get out. They get a grade, those kinds of things. And they're doing things conventionally as well. And so information is just all messed up. And so we really need to take 10 steps back, look at each other, form community, and then teach each other clarity and then generate clarity. Because their systems don't generate clarity. Because the soil actually is very clean and clear how it works. That's why I can do my whole micro to macro thing and do the whole down to the biochemistry and all that kind of stuff. It actually clicks. I've had So many students at this point have like epiphanies. And that's the thing is, nature wants you to understand it. Like, that's the crazy thing. Nature, like, wants to, like, work with other nature bits. You know, we are part of nature. We're not like, there's nature. Look at it go. I wonder what would happen if we ever could interact. It's like, no, you're a part of nature. We're just we're in a natural pattern and system. And so bringing that back, using that holistic perspective, multiple perspectives, sourcing not just your own tests, but that feedback with community is going to turn into part of those perspectives, because your soil test results will go into that database, and then you'll be able to look at your community and be like, oh, everyone's pH is over 7.5 here. This is the linchpin for our bioregion right now. Oh my gosh. And you're like, oh, it's because we all have limestone as the bedrock 2 feet down. And we're all using our wells. Bum, 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 bum. Right, right? You start figuring it out for your bioregion and your people. This is community in feedback. And you realize your heart is tied to the communities. And right? Right? This is real. This is, and this is how holistic like healing is when we start regenerating things, you know? And so we take informed action, but then we're like informing others with that action as well. And it becomes this cycling, not just, man, I'm getting chills. It becomes cycling, not just of information, but of wisdom. Yeah. It's powerful. And because it's our health, it's our kids' health, it's our baby's health. This is the ultimate like leverage point in our lives. So and it also probably sounds like common sense after a little bit. I don't know how that check mark got there, but someone put it there on the line. But I agree. It's a green check mark. It sounds like common sense because it is. The reality is in our current world, unfortunately, common sense is not always common practice. And I would say as a general rule, it is not common practice. Because of, you know, industrial, like, schooling is not really designed to educate people. So people get really, really worried about one side of the equation without looking at the other. It's like the whole, like, CO2 thing without looking at the flip side, which is photosynthesis and how we've lost so much in the desertification and loss of nature. And it's like, okay, let's bring back nature. Not some fancy like CO2 fuel that you're like using a machine. You know, let's just bring back nature, okay? Please. And so how did I become a citizen scientist? Well, first of all, a lot of this common sense stuff started just falling in my lap. And I would ask questions to like world famous scientists and they would be like, Matt, that's brilliant. And I'd be like, you're kidding me, right? Like I'd get a little bit upset, you know. I'd be like, "What do you mean? You know, and realize that before?" And then it started stacking, and then I realized like this was like the story of my life that I was living out, and that I needed to live it out and become part of it, right? But at first, I started getting these things that I was like, "Y'all don't see this, really." And then everyone's like, what are you talking about, Matt? And by the way, this is what my childhood was like. I literally would like be reading in history class, be like, did you realize they likely understood this at that time, which means this? The teacher would be like, quiet, Matt. Other students would be like, you're so weird, right? Anyway, I became a citizen scientist because these things kept occurring to me that were so linchpin oriented that it kind of was like a punch in the gut, to be honest. Especially when the scientists, and it's exciting, you know, it's exciting and fun, but there's also that deeper realization like, oh shoot, no one's even like watching the door, you know what I mean? In a way with our science, no one's even like protecting things. And so it's real wild. And so I saw that, I felt this deep obligation start to well up within me. And then I had this really good friend still a good friend, still one of my best friends, but he flew down and he taught me DNA testing, DNA sequencing. This is William Padilla Brown. He is the exemplary citizen scientist. And he taught me how to use the Oxford Nanopore MinION, which is way beyond the whole PCR thing. PCR is like a delay pedal with an overdrive. So you get some like just like mutations and aberrations. And with the PCRing, you can go too high with the cycles and make it read as anything. Right? And then you also, with fungi and PCR, you have to select what you want to see before you see it. Sound problematic? Anyone? Right. And so I like the opposite, where I do the work and then we see what's in there. That's what this is. It's direct reads. It splits the DNA and reads it like a barcode as it guides it through nanopores. So this is a brand new thing. This changes all of DNA sequencing. It really does. And it's just so reliable. This thing is unbelievably reliable. And so a new day has arrived, new accuracy, new reliability, new affordability, all these things. But I was really intimidated. And it took him flying down and coming to my house and like bringing it like a crew of film crew to do get me to do it. And man, you know what? I appreciate that man so deeply. I love that man so deeply. He is such a good guy. And he just saw the potential in what I could do, I guess. And he just knew it was the thing to do. So he flew down. Yeah. And he flew down with someone else to fly to film it. So it was really wild. It was really, really wild. And yeah, the whole thing is filmed technically. He has all the footage. I mean, DNA sequencing is not short. It takes a long time to do. So it's hours and hours and hours and hours. And so it was that, but then it was also curiosity. So don't you want to know who's in the compost, who's in the soil? And you're like, what do you mean? DNA sequence of soil? That's great. Think about it for a second. What's organic matter made of? Right? You with me? What's organic matter made of? The past, right? The past of life. So that means it's DNA. And not just that. DNA can theoretically take up to millions of years to break down, right? So the past is always there. And it's like up to like 20 to 40% of the soil profile is chunks of DNA that they can source and use to pivot and cue. So don't you want to know who's in there? Don't you want to know that your inoculant worked? You spent all that money. You paid for that inoculant. Do you want to know if it's really an inoculant or not, or if it's fake? You want to see your roots glow, because it's that's the truth. If they're inoculated, they're going to glow like this or brighter. I've got some that like, we're like, okay, turn the light down because it's so bright, so much phosphorus. So don't you want to see where the nutrients went? If you're doing tests and you're like, where do the nutrients go? We put them in here. You can see where they went. Don't you want to know who's in there? Come on. Look, your IMO, your indigenous microorganisms. Well, what is it? What actually is in there? Right. So, and then that original feeling of obligation, these are so deep. They're such deep linchpins. That's why for years I've been saying, once I finish the trilogy, I'm going to write Mind, Body, Soil, because that's the truth. And I'm going to gather doctors and I'm going to do a bunch of interviews and do the way I do research, which is going to, I build mini libraries. And so I like compile research, organize the research, create a library, and then I like digest and like deeply immerse myself in it until I'm fluent in that data set. And then things start percolating through. And so I feel like really responsible because I know most people aren't like that. They won't read all the texts. I grew up with my mom being, she told me, she was like, they're all the other legislators are lazy. They don't even read the bills they're voting upon. They're just doing what they're told. My mom made the helmet law in fourth grade, so it was a mixed bag. It was really important. But man, when I was in fourth grade, my friends were like, your mom sucks. But yeah, she did a lot of things. She did incredible things. But she would read like 4 to 5 foot tall tracts, like bills that are tracts of writing, and argue and memorize them all. And so she would be able to go in debates and like be like, on page 34, or 334, paragraph 5, and she'd like read off the thing. Wild, I know. But she would destroy people that way and like truth, you know? And so I saw her like reestablish wetlands as a kid using like all these like working with people she didn't like, working with people didn't like were different from what her political party was. Anyway, she would always do the reading. And part of the reason I can memorize things the way I do is because of her. And also that example. So as a very, very young child, I just saw someone reading like 10,000 page documents on the regular. I mean, even today to relax, she reads books like a wood chipper. And so that's kind of what I do. I mean, I read still like 4 to 5 books a week. Most people are like, wait, what? And they're like, I thought you're like working. So, and it's like, yeah, well, I do audiobooks while I'm like out there in the field working. But anyway, tangent. I always go on tangents. But another, it was all this responsibility that came. I realized I had these pieces. I realized I had these skills. Like, not many people have that example of a mom who's willing to do that work. And so I am willing to, I've been willing, and I'm still willing to do the work because no one else will. No one else takes responsibility. It's wild to me. And so, and a lot of it's time. People just don't have the time. A lot of it's resources. Some of the books, are $600 just for one book. But they do that to lock people out of the information. Right now, they're taking all, Wiley is taking all the mycological, all the microbiological, all the information that they can touch and buy, and then putting it behind a paywall as soon as they acquire it. So there's like a real thing happening right now. And so I feel really like there's this thing that has been given to me for me to then fix it and then give it to everyone. And so I've been doing that work, and really the fixing part's clarity. It's like once you get through all the information and realize like this is all messed up because these people didn't read this. This is all messed up because these people didn't use these tests. This is all messed up because their funding is all messed up. This is But for real though, you have to actually like go through it all and it's that work. It's that work aspect. And so when we have thousands of students relying upon them, that's me. When we have students all over the world, when you have farmers all over the world who are growing food for their actual families and actual communities, relying upon you to help them. When my peers are relying on me to do my part, he's doing like the fungi part, the truffle part, all of that. He's not going to do my part. He's setting me up so I can finish doing my part, you know? And it's also because I was a teacher that taught teachers. And so that mentorship, that deeper layer My school had no books, so we wrote all our own curriculum. So I've been creating curriculum and doing this, and it again, it's that skill. I have the skills. I don't see anyone else with the skills. Oh dear. I need to do this. This is why I'm here. And so that's why all those books exist. That's why some of them are over 400 pages, peer reviewed, triple, standard based, fully cited, all that, right? I also have a DIY tattooed my arm. So it's a little bit part of who I am. But the thing to realize is we all need to ask ourselves who needs our help right now. We want to go to a next level in our lives. If we want to get clarity, we want to get back on path, we need to ask ourselves who needs you on your A game right now? Who needs you as your highest self right now? That's what responsibility is. Your ability to respond to something with your highest self. Yeah. It's an opportunity. And when in feedback, when we're receiving that information, we respond. And this is why I believe the key to everything that we see right now, all the challenges in the world, just have that simple thing. Get in feedback with community. Get in feedback with nature and let it flow and cycle. And we will see a very different world emerge. Number one, in feedback with nature. Number two, in feedback with community over time. Number three, sourcing multiple perspectives, taking those steps back, looking, using community to reframe, to deepen our understandings, to stay open to deeper learning from nature. And then taking that informed action with an eye to the future and an eye to whether it's working. It's so important to verify that it's working. That's the feedback loop. That's it beginning over again at one. So let's dive into three stories. And these are just three keys to understand. One day I got an email from a professional beekeeper, and he was dealing with insects. He was dealing with bacteria. He was dealing with all these problems. He had just bought it. He didn't know like what to do. But he saw that there was this abandoned orchard where the trees were thriving, and it was surrounded by a pine forest. And I was like, okay, that is the native IMO. Gather. I gave him the regenerative soil ebook. Told him to go do their recipe, the IMO Korean Natural Farming recipe. He went and did it. And then this is his response. And by the way, oh, did I have the date on there? I can't see it on my end. You probably can see it on your end up top. But it was later that spring, and he's just freaking out. And it is that just that easy that we can get in feedback loop again. So he went to the feedback loop between the natural microbes and the soil and brought it back so that the actual tr like the trees could actually be participating in the actual economy again. It's the native indigenous microorganisms that are already keyed to that soil. They're already unlocking the non-soluble nutrition. Because all the mineral tests we ever do from the extension centers are just looking at what's already there, solubilized. So it's not what's locked up that microbes unlock. Microbes unlock the stuff that's locked up. This is why we like microbes. But it also means that that test from the extension center is like one half, and then microbes are the other half. And it could be like 90%, depending on where you are, the microbes you have, and the nutrients present in your soil. Because some of us have sand, right? And it's not holding much, very simple. Some of us have like clay and there's particular parent material. Some of us have limestone. You know what I mean? All those are factors. But I want us to understand that it's the microbes that we're partnering with in that feedback loop between nature and ourselves that is closing the loop between our plants and the soil economy. We got to close that loop. We got to bring things back. We're going to talk about that more. He got great peaches, but he just applied specific recipes in a specific pattern. It is literally not hard. And he did this in less than one season. What if we added epifluorescence, right? Now it's a completely new story. Now he's keeping track. Now, before things become macro problems, he gets them when they're micro. And now he can verify his inoculations actually worked. And he can witness the observed benefits firsthand. So, better peaches. And then he can start making biofertilizer blends that are particular to his situation. And the IMOs are great. They're great. But if it doesn't exist in your environment, it doesn't exist in your environment. We do have some, the past with the genes that can be triggered and signaled. But then there's literal loss, like the mycorrhizal fungi that we've tilled away, that we've fungicided away. We need to bring it back. And so we need to make biofertilizer blends. We need to bring inoculants. We need to do it all. We need to do things that we can verify as well. And that means we get to make informed decisions. And guess what happens when you make an informed decision? What happens to your confidence level? What happens to your follow through? When you're going to hit the ball and you know you're going to nail it, you walk up with that confidence. How hard is your follow through? It's that clean, clear, confident follow through, right? You need that to do this work. And now he can do so much more. He can help more. And the end all be all was he shared that abundance with people in need. And when we unlock abundance, we actually have the ability to share, the ability to save money, the ability to level up our families and our lives, the ability to take back our community, bring back farms that are being sold and just paved under. Abundance is so incredibly key for us taking back our communities in so many different ways. We need abundance. We need people to have true regenerative wealth, to be able to be like, oh, well, we make money in our town doing the right thing. That's why our economy is awesome and we're all proud of it. And our kids want to go and work these jobs and create regenerative businesses that give back to the community as they make their money and as they make their family great. And it's like, that's the whole deal. That's it, you know? That's beautiful futures for all of us. So let's unlock that that abundance. So this is where we're at still. The see-through parts where it's already burned and dead and it's just later on. And then the brown, where it's like orange brown, that's the bark beetle death. The green is the still remaining living trees. Do you guys see how little green there is? Yeah. Do you guys see in the naked part, do you guys see any like trees coming back, or do you see grasses? Yeah. This is the reality. But what if all those trees that we're going to have to replant, and hopefully this time we don't do a monoculture of Douglas fir pine, because that's what we did, and we did it uninoculated. So guess what? There's a reason they're all sick. They're not in feedback loop with nature. They're literally like city trees. So Hidden Life of Trees is an excellent book to check out. I love that book. But we need to inoculate these trees as they go into the ground this time. Let's fix history. Let's go back and let's fix this. And then we need to be planting consortiums of trees. We need to be planting groupings that are synergistic, that are native. And we got to do our best, because some of these things are dead. Some of these things are gone and extinct. And we might have to fill in the holes with other things. In Australia, they're talking about bringing bison, because the buffalo would change the entire landscape, and the landscape needs it. And so it's wild. It's controversial, no doubt. But when something's extinct, you get another thing happen. Eucalyptus in Australia is fire prone, and it's the beginning and the end of secession. Huh? Yeah. It's because humans used fire to tame Australia. And because they did that, that allowed for eucalyptus to take over when all those other species went extinct. So we need to fill in the gaps as best we can. You know what I mean? And we can't look to, you know, the first peoples of every, like, you know, continent and be like, you drove this one animal out. You know, and we can't do that. Mm-hmm. But we can bring back the pieces and then observe them and be in feedback and be like, this plant actually does really well in this climate. It's not acting invasive. It's synergizing. And there are plants that can do that. But then there's also the invasives, which we do also need to displace. But the reason the invasives are there is because they are filling a gap in the ecosystem that was opened up by the simplification that happened over the past, you know, 400 years. So keep this in mind. So we want to inoculate these things, but we want to bring back a group of things. We want to be planting really strategically. We want to do earthworks to rehydrate the entire landscape. In other words, we need to cut the landscape. But what if they inoculated these and then they checked back on the inoculations to make sure they took. And then if they didn't take, they just applied, they did a soil soak to guarantee they took. Remember mycorrhizal fungi, it expands roots by 10,000 times the surface area. There is nothing that can replace the amount of benefit that you get from mycorrhizal fungi. There is no synthetic this or that or the other. There's no quick fix. There's no magic juice in a bottle. Mycorrhizal fungi co-evolved with plants. And yes, there's a few non-mycorrhizal, but I have a theory that because the non-mycorrhizals were mostly the plants that we found in the cousins of the plants that we found invading our fields, like pigweed. Those are the ones we went nuclear on with all the chemicals. And we might have killed off their fungal partners. We need to go and start using regenerative soil microscopy on wild plants that are cousins to the non-mycorrhizals we have, like Chenopodia family, Amaranthus, all those things, and look at them in nature and see if there's any partnerships. Because this technology is brand new. And you can technically, I wouldn't do this because I'm always so nervous about like damaging it, but this can go in the field. And we're going to radically change all of soil science in short order because of that. But it's all new. So if they could actually check, they could actually respond. Again, feedback leads to responsibility. And so it's literally the ability to respond. And so we could literally guarantee that these things are inoculated, which means that like the chances of survival, the chances of thriving, of a long life are so dramatically different with a plant that has its evolutionarily dependent microbiology. And so we have to bring these things back in many ways because these are just destroyed ecosystems. And you look at our rain and you look at what's in the rain and you're like, there's fungicides, there's pesticides in the rain. And so it's killing things when it rains. And depending on where you are, not all rain, not everywhere, and not at all times has that. And even then it'll be variable, right? But this is well documented that the water cycle is contaminated. And so this is why the lakes, rivers, streams, a lot of them are not be able to support life. A lot of them are so depleted. A lot of them are sick. We need to do the work. We need to bring back the primeval forests again. they weren't even inoculated when we were replanting after we chopped all those trees down. But now we can fix that. And now we can protect the IMOs that are present because we actually can see them. Because before, first of all, before they're looking at microscopes without a camera. And it was also like blurry microscopes. And then it was also the wrong like lighting. And so the amount of like protection or understanding, it was so limited. They had conjectures and ideas and they intuited things. But I mean, look at the actual raw data. They would, most of it was hearsay. They didn't have cameras. It was mostly hearsay. And so now we have the ability to identify, find, and categorize the microbes that are in these pristine areas. So we can say, hey, this area has microbes that are not present anywhere else in my country. This area must be protected. These microbes represent the heritage of all peoples in this area, because it is. That will actually inoculate all the rest of that biome and bioregion and biotype, because it could be like, you know, grasslands or like forests, you know what I mean, depending on what we're talking about. But how are you going to protect them if you don't see them? Right? You're not going to. And if it's really fuzzy picture, they're not going to give you the time of day. They're going to use that against you. But if it's a hyper clear National Geographic level picture, by the way, yesterday I finally did write back to National Geographic. You guys kept writing me and being like, stop, stop, and finally respond. Yeah, stop giving the cold shoulder to National Geographic. It's literally what Scott Carpenter wrote. Scott, you're probably watching this. Thank you. I did write back. And I'm going to help them out so that we have that high quality spread. Because they're going down the wrong path. They were going to do like electron microscopy. And they were like, but we'll kill everything. And I'm like, exactly. And then for like a gatefold spread, they were thinking like bright field. And I'm like, no. Bright field will look ugly. And I mean, you might be like, oh, but bright field's beautiful on that. It's like, yeah. But is it dark field? Then think about the black background on the gatefold, the National Geographic. Yeah. So I'm coaching and talking to them about it for the National Geographic gatefold on the Soil Food Web internationally. So I'm really excited about that. And I just had to get all my courses and all my responsibilities taken care of before I went on to anything else. But so we're doing it. You could have National Geographic level images as well. And it really comes from that clarity. And when people see it, seeing is believing. You see the mycorrhizal fungi and you're like, oh, it glows. Okay, all right. I get it. It glows. You know, it's not hard. A child gets it, you know. And then unlocking restoration, we actually need to unlock restoration, because if we don't look, we don't actually see. Like, we literally can't comprehend things that aren't in our mind. And if we don't look, we don't even consider them. If no one documents them, they functionally don't exist. This is why we need soil testing databases, and we're going to launch the RSoil database in 2024. We have to, and it's going to change everything. Going to make these things inarguable, because we're going to replicate them thousands and thousands of times over bioregionally. And then you're like, wait, what's going to happen then? Oh, the good stuff. Because then you're going to have bioregional nuance, good, better, best emerge. And then we're going to have like, oh, well, he puts kefir in his compost tea, and they're like, kefir. And suddenly everyone starts doing kefir. And then we raise the boats. And then we're like, this person's leading again. And they're like, what are they doing? They're spiking with kelp. And they're like, oh, okay, everyone's spiking with kelp now. Right. And meanwhile, like the quality of food, nutrient density wise, is going ka-gung, 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 ka-gung. And the quality of soil and the soil organic matter is like just rocketing up exponentially. And so we're chasing the right thing finally. And we're seeing the results happen as a reaction and a result of that focus. So that's what it's really about. We're going to have the ability to, for the first time ever, to put minerals and biology in the same space, along with toxins and plant health. You're going to be able to compare your samples over time. You're going to be able to see the leaders. You're going to be able to have readouts of your tests. And I really want to be able to measure these things over a huge spread of information. We're going to obviously start with just the RegenerSol microscopy results, and then we're going to start working in DNA. Building in the bionutrient meter is on there. It's starting out too. They're just calibrating that, but that will become stronger over time as well. And it's adding in all this data that seems like so much data that actually creates clarity. When I do the DNA testing, there's like 25 that show up as like the ones, and it's like hockey stick. And then it goes down by like 10, like orders of magnitude, essentially. And then like as you go, and then there's like one every 100,000 is this microbe. It's like that type of microbe, there's like millions. You know what I mean? And so it's like we recognize like our soil has like exponential potential to grow all these things. But there are actually dominant microbes. And so, unless you're creating like an exotic environment that's feeding that one particular microbe and then fighting off all these other microbes, you're not going to have very different like microbiology usually. You're going to have the all-stars. You're going to have the ones that hold things together when everything falls apart. Streptomyces, actinobacteria, the false fungi that everyone sees, and bacteria. And so it's like it's pretty wild. And so it's all those other little ones among those that is the plant endophytes, that is the plant, you know what I mean? All the things that we amplify and then we bring in, and then they have like a huge effect on the plant, right? So there are these linchpins, and it really boils down to things that we can understand. That's the craziest thing about this. Is people are like, wow, you have such command of the information. And I'm like, yeah, because once you get your fingers around it, you actually can. It's like, you actually can. And so it's a lot of information, you know what I mean? But when you organize it, it simplifies itself because there's clarity built into nature. Nature has clear patterns. And using our eyes, our wonderful tool, we actually can use comparison and community to improve. So your result, you're going to compare it to all the other results, and you're going to be like, oh, okay, clearly it's that. You know what I mean? No, depending on what you're trying to see and what you're trying to prove or disprove. So the more testing we do in the situation, the more testing we do transparently and in community, the more protection and more understanding we have. I always tell the story of a consultant that got duped by a farmer who gave the same sample to another soil like food web consultant in their country in Europe. And the farmer exposed that publicly that their results were totally divergent. And then they did a Zoom together, and then they were like weren't able to get the results to match. And so it's like really incredibly important to understand that the numerical ways of doing things aren't working for people. We have to do other testing. So it's not just more testing, it's fundamentally new testing. I mean, we'll talk about myth busting next time, but it's so incredibly important to understand. It's not just more testing that we're doing, it's new testing and new ways of understanding it. If we were in biology class and we were talking about deer and elk and like wolves and stuff, would you be like counting the numbers every year, like assiduously, or would you be looking at the ratios? over time. Yeah, ratios. Because you can't ever know what the fixed number, the full number is, especially in traditional science. There's a fallacy in current science that thinks that you can actually figure everything out because we have like Google Maps and stuff. People don't know those clouds are painted on. People don't know that like there are certain things that are like fabricated on there on purpose to protect certain areas of the world. So it's like really important that we do better testing, more testing. We create community, we create clarity, and we get away from the disinformation, misinformation, confusion, muddied water. So, what if we restore the native soils and heal the sick forests finally? I can feel myself, and my meditations is often what I do. I walk through these forests, these healed forests. I stand on top of mountains and I overlook valleys that we've restored. And I look into the distance as far as I can see, and I see land restored. That's what I see in my future visions. That's what I see when I meditate, because I know it's possible. And I know the narratives right now, the way they're doing things. I mean, the whole fires in California literally are man-made. I mean, they've been draining the water expertly, like inverse evil, like the opposite of permaculturists, gathering the water expertly and siphoning it away from the foothills. So the foothills haven't had for 40, 50 years their natural runoff, and there are already pyrophytic landscapes. So they knew they would burst into flames eventually. So we can fix all this stuff. We can absolutely fix all this stuff. But there are literally adversarial elements going on, and we have to face those things. And when we do, we'll be able to bring back nature. We'll be able to restore the native soils. But it starts with forming our communities again. It starts with understanding how nature actually works and getting in feedback with it. It's those two things, nature and community, nature and community. I believe we're going to discover unique IMOs that are going to speed up restoration. I'm getting chills right now. I believe that there are unique microbes waiting for us to discover in still untouched and pristine areas, and areas that we've fostered, areas that we've protected and conserved, that are waiting to join in the restoration, in this revolution that we are in the midst of. And I know we look at the world, we see this huge decline, we see all this monstrousness. But the reality is, we can heal the world. And that's part of the reason why there's this monstrousness happening, because we actually can do it from the grassroots. We can do it ourselves. We don't need to pay some international corporation or give our rights away to some government. We don't need to do anything like that. We can do all this. We can be the heroes of the story. And so we speed up because we know what works. Also, we might find those microbes early on, we might find those microbes later, but once we have that feedback loop, again, it's that follow through. You know you're going to hit the ball, you can feel it, you know what works. So you go with full confidence. And people who move with full confidence, whoo, you see them now. You see the way they walk. Yeah, there's something different. So did you know that 22 days before I was born, this paper was written? You can see it's 1982, March 1st. It's almost my birthday. You can intuit when my birthday is. And this is the naissance, the beginning of all of this. And you're like, wait a second, Elaine Ingham was writing papers about this when she was in college? Yes. Yes. And so this is still used today and referenced today. See the references on the bottom? They reference this paper in a 2008 paper. Well, not today. I mean, you know what I mean? In modern times. So 81 or 82, and it's still being referenced. What if she followed this path further into the 80s? We'd be so such a different space. She'd be a mycologist, wouldn't she? Yep. But she went a different route. But why didn't she do that? Where would she be now? Right. And this is the first time we met in person, is after we had worked together extensively on a book together. It was mercury vapor lamps then. So she did it really to protect her health, which was probably smart. She's still with us and vibrant today. And so mercury vapor, you break that, it can explode after 2,000 hours. It was common. It, hazmat suit. You suddenly have a toxic waste site in your house. This is LED. And not only that, there's no shield because it's not harmful to my eyes. So LED lights. Okay. It just happened recently too. Now imagine you get this email. You've had the machine for a while. You sent LW Scientific, the people who created this, images. And you were like, hey, I'm loving it. This is what I'm getting. This is what Dr. James Francis White verifies that I'm doing. And then I got this. Dr. Elaine Ingham and her assistant Carla are working in their fluorescence imaging, and I'm working with them to improve their images. It seems that you are creating some amazing fluorescent images. I wondered if it would be okay to show them these, to show them how good it can be. And it was at this moment that I realized like something had happened. Like I had broken through, because like everything was flipping now. I realized I was at the cutting edge. And even with this time period, Dr. James Francis White told me that like when I was doing these images, he was like, you've been using the microscope only months? He was like, Matt, this is wild. He was like, you're going to be an expert in months. And I was like, how can that be? Like, how is that real? And then it became real. I realized I had to step into this. I realized that these things were aligning for me to step into. And I realized the reason this technology is arriving now, the reason this is arriving in our lap, the reason all these breakthroughs are coming to me is it's our story and it's our time. It's here for you and me and our communities. And that's the reason I'm creating this database. Because I see it that way. I see it as this is the next step in all of our communities, all of our health, all of the health and safety of like the future of all of our communities rides upon this. And the crazy thing is, this is not hard. You place the root under there and you grab the light and that's it. There you go. But you got to understand, you got to have some experience and understanding. But literally, I was talking to Finney and Make Peace last night, you know, Kiss the Ground and Common Ground, you know, the movies that are selling out in theaters. He was saying last night, like, that he would love to add to his next movie, me walking in with a root and then doing that and then you seeing it there. So that's going to happen. Because it really is that easy, you know? And I'm also going to, at that time, be like, and now you must buy one, Finian, so you can check your roots. And he'll be like, it is just that easy. So I guess I will. And he will. So I'm so excited about this. It does require experience or does require some understanding, but it's really not that hard. And it's like the light switch being on or off. Are your roots glowing or not? And then it can be 100% glowing, 100% inoculation with arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi. So is all of the root glowing? Yeah. Okay, good. 100%. And then as all of this, I've been talking about exploration and discovery, innovation. This is the reality. I have been able to receive so much new innovation. I feel this deep obligation to share it, but I also share all the way and give you the car keys too. Not just like egoically like set up that pyramidic structure that everyone does. Yikes. Ah! No, I want to give you the car keys. I got a 17-year-old. I know how this works. I want you to be able to drive, you know, and I want you to be able to explore too and understand too, because when 90% is unidentified, when prior testing didn't even use epifluorescence, when no one was actually checking their roots to make sure inoculants worked. Do you guys see the possibilities with me? You guys see this? We are at a cusp moment where emperor wears no clothes and we're the ones with the clothes. You know what I mean? Like we're about to like give context and understanding and all this stuff to people. And it's the real deal. It's the real patterns of actual nature. It's the real way that plants actually work. This is why people have like doubled their yields with just regenerative soil. It's a technological breakthrough. And the timing of it just fell into my lap in a miraculous way. And that's why I'm so open about it. Because it's going to change everything. And remember like floppy disks? Remember like the old computers, the laser printer? Got to make sure the tracking's right and then it gets off track and you're like, no, right? Remember that? How do they compare to this? Because it's that different. It really is that different. This is a new era. We're seeing things we've never seen before in ways we've never seen them before. So imagine you're a soil consultant. You're trying to convince this person. You're working on their fields. They know zero. They don't know anything about soil. They saw the biggest little farm. They've got big hearts. They're good people, but they have no knowledge or experience. And you want them to get it because you know they're good people. And when they get it, they'll be all in and they won't be so hesitant about investing or following through. Follow through, remember, has to do with confidence. What if you could show them? What if you could show them something that would literally change everything? What you're looking at here is something I created. So below is the hemocytometer. That's an industry standard that is used throughout all biology for counting microbes, counting blood cells, counting yeast. And the reality is, though, when you use these grids, they're very useful for keeping things comparable. You know what I mean? Because it's the same exact amount of space. Now, the dye that I was able to figure out. So basically, there's like protocols and all these tests that are out there, but they're all based around old technology. So I realized like we could do things differently. And so I figured out how to use a dye that was outside of the range of usage, that's very old, trustworthy, used as medicine, and then use it at such a cheap rate that we're doing 2 drops per sample. And it's super diluted already. So it's so like vital. And it's also something that would occur naturally in nature. So it's like exactly all the parameters that I was looking for. I did research on dyes for a long time because fluorescence diacetate, the thing that like, you know, like Elaine uses and stuff. I mean, yeah, there's a reason why like people worry about it causing anaphylactic shock when they do IVs with it, right? So I don't use that. And also the whole like making molten agar and then turning the microbes into the molten agar. How are they going to move naturally and be alive? Doesn't make sense to me. So I innovated this. I created this. It took a long time to figure this out, but the end result was I was able to create a dye that the microbes would eat, and then I could easily see and count the microbes. Now, let's go one further, because what happened after that was this. I started doing side-by-sides, and then what happened after that was when you do the side-by-sides after the dye and with the epifluorescent light on, notice I'm like stacking things. I didn't realize this until I did all this. You can see the lightness, darkness versus the like the how fluorescent it is and how murky it is, right? And so you're like, wait a second, Matt. So Number four, obviously, you know, we can all see this, the colors. Number four is the most bright, so it has the least amount of life because the dye didn't get absorbed by the life. Number one has the most absorption, and so you have to turn the lighting up even a little bit. These are all the same lighting levels to see the glowing individuals because they've sucked in all that light. Then it's two, then it's three, then it's four. Right. And so number one here is my dirt road's actual worm casting. And so it's the natural standard because we have to have standards to compare things. Otherwise, everything's meaningless, right? It's all subjective then. And so standards, and then standards for comparison. And so I really, really believe in that, having a set of these standards to go off of. And so we can really easily see when we do that, which of these bagged worm castings is the best. Obviously, this number two is the best out of those three on the right. But man, they're not very good at all. Yeah, that's the lesson, really, actually, is they're not very good at all. The bagged store-bought worm castings are terrible. But think about if you had a client, how easy was that for me to explain? The one that's darkest has the most life because they've absorbed the most. And this is all 4K video, so it's going to move. And you might be asking, how did you create that protocol? That's crazy. Well, this is a revolution. I keep trying to tell you that. And so it's bigger than all of us. And that means that there's this like inertia. There's a wave. There's a tidal sea change happening. And you can ride it too. I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm riding on this thing that is up. Well, because healthy soil is healthy plants, and healthy plants is healthy animals and healthy people. They're all one thing in one loop. People are needing this and demanding this, whether they know it or not. People want health. People want good food. They want clean food. They don't even know what it means, like technically or scientifically. They don't care. They know it when they taste it because they have a supercomputer in their head. Our brains are supercomputers, and we have the most sensitive and most sophisticated devices in our smell and taste. And when we bite that peach and smell it, what is this? And if you've ever had like a biodynamic peach or something like that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And so this is open to you. This is completely open to you. You can grow at a new level. You can serve at a new level. There are always opportunities in spaces of growth. In spaces of upwelling in nature, that's like where all the most prolific areas in the ocean are, is where there's upwelling. You know, the most fertile spaces are where there's the most diversity in life. Opportunities are in the spaces of growth. And this is the space of greatest growth that I see right now, because it affects all those other things. So what if you became a citizen scientist? Just imagine that. You can do this. I want you to know that you can do this. If you want to learn more, join us for the live Q&A here in a second and the giveaway. You get to get my shirt. So we have, and I heard you loud and clear, folks. I have an XL and a large. We have two sizes, and I'll be sure to say which size is which. So when you want to compete for the one that's your size, you get that one. And of course, join us next week for the third in this series of breakthroughs in soil microscopy. We'll be talking about myth busting in soil microscopy, which is going to change everything for you. I hinted at a bunch of things, but we'll follow through. We'll go through them all next week. I'm so grateful for you all being here. How was that? Feel free to let me know in the chat. All right. All right. Lynn says, wonderful. Dead Folk Flower says, invigorating as always. Thank you. I appreciate that. Jenny Sampson, Salmson. It's the first time I've ever seen that last name. That's awesome. Says, great. Thank you so much. Oh, you're so welcome. Vanessa says, mind blowing as usual. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. Charles says, was awesome. Man, blown away. Thank you for being here. Stephanie says, fascinated. I'm glad. Farmer C, hey, good to see you, Cheryl. Thank you all for being here. Amazing. Another information-packed Zoom. Thank you for being here, Jeremy. Thank you, Aaron, for letting folks in. Everyone, thank you, Aaron. Yeah. That allows me, to like go all in. And I really appreciate that because like my heart always wants to like help everyone. And so it's like, I'm always going to like stop the thing and then like, but I'm actually doing better by just focusing on helping everyone by just performing. But I can't do it without you guys' help. Thank you. Yeah, Kenneth, I love it too. Kenneth says, love your new revolution in soil microscopy and soil health because it's going to lead to our health. And I mean, it already is. It already is. So I'm really, really excited about what comes next. All right. What questions do you all have? I'm really excited to do the giveaway here, but let's start with one question and then we'll do a giveaway. What is the steps you would use to study and figure out why a certain plant in the landscape is having a negative effect on grazing pasture? How would you find out what niche it's filling? How can we fast track it out? What steps would you take with and without a microscope? Well, I would just, first of all, start with observation. I mean, if it's taking over your landscape, and it's pushing out, you know, the forage that is beneficial for your animals that is native, that's a problem. And so you're going to then backtrack and be like, well, who is this? Where is it from? What is its pH preference? And you're going to find out a few different things. You're going to find out potential like cousins, potential things that belong there that you could bring in. And then also gaps, things that are like, oh, it's here because it's like really high pH. Oh, it's here because, you know, this, that, or the other. So I would start with looking at it that way. And you can do that by identifying who it is, understanding their functions and why. If you haven't read Regenerative Soil, that might be critical to understanding a few of those aspects. All the cycles for each nutrient are in there. It's the only resource with all the plant essential nutrients and their cycles. All right. My employees get to listen to the web art. Lucky them. I love it. I love it. I was thinking this past week about how black tarps affect the soil microbiome of the soil. It definitely, thanks, Aaron. That's a great question. It definitely speeds up decomposition because it traps a lot of things, but it traps heat. It traps the moisture. It does a lot of things that allows for retention and breakdown. But the number one thing I worry about is the transference of like phthalates and BPA and PFAS and all those kinds of things from those flexible plastics. Like that's the number one thing I worry about most. And also the microplastics. That's what I worry about most about that. The benefits of them are the fact that it can create that closed environment. It's totally works. It works really well. But this is why we're all going to shift back to having hemp tarps, you know what I mean, that eventually break down, you know, and then we are using them as our compost covers and then we're composting them. And that's okay. It's better that way than any other way. So I mean, our sails roping was all made of hemp. So it wasn't like that we went out to sea and then came back in tatters, right? It stood up. So the idea that we're beholden to plastic, it's a non-starter. It just doesn't make any sense. Our ancestors proved. I mean, part of the reason why I say that is my dad is from Iowa. Weed was a ditch weed growing up. It was everywhere. Hemp was everywhere. And in his mind, like, he never understood why it was made illegal, because it's cannabis, but it's not like it's not the stuff that everyone smokes. And so he was always very confused. So I grew up knowing the difference between these things, because he'd be like, in the Navy, we have to import all our hemp for all of our roping from like Egypt. And I was like, huh, Dad? Yeah. And so, yeah, hemp. We could literally be growing these things and we could bring all of this back. And not only that, one of the biggest holdups in the hemp industry is processing facilities are mostly in Canada still. It's like, if we just have processing facilities here, bring back industry here, we could do so much more. Maybe someone's hearing that who feels like they have the ability to follow through with that. Please do, because we really, really need the it's the decortication, I think is the term. I might be wrong. Joy Beckerman is the expert on hemp. Joy, she's like, when you look up National Geographic and the word hemp, she's the video they took. Yeah, she's amazing. She's the lawyer that helped get one of the lawyers that helped get hemp legalized in America, representing Dr. Bronner's and Nativa for John Rulak. And John Rulak is the executive producer for Kiss the Ground and Common Ground. Right. We're all friends. I was looking for John last night to see if he was there at the South by Southwest party. He was not. But I did hang out with Finney and McPeace, which was good. And then I got to meet a bunch of students that I didn't realize were local. So that was really cool. I was thinking this, how long until the Regenerative Soil DNA book comes out? Ha! Thanks, Vanessa. I am going to do a bunch of things first. And the way I operate is I have to have momentum. I'm not going to bring something out that's not like compelling yet. Like, there's compelling aspects to the DNA. But I want to do 100 more tests on the things that I've already tested. And I also want to gather like ranges. Like way more ranges. Like I've done dozens of tests. I want to do like maybe 150, 100, you know what I mean? My friends who do DNA testing are like, Matt, you know what that is monetarily, right? I know. But that's the thing, is it's like, just don't tell my wife. But for real though, like, I'm going to take the bath and the money to do the work, because that's the only way that we're actually going to have the like substantive like value from that. So DNA is like a river. So you have to do it multiple times to catch the movement of the river. What they've been doing is doing pinpricks in a moving river and being like, this is it. We did it. It's done now. And it's like, no, you tested 5 minutes later and it's expressing differently. It's the environment. The season affects the DNA expression. And they're also just starting to do shotgun metagenomics to get the epigenetic expression. Those of you who have been with me a long time know I care about the epigenetic expression primary. But also this larger grab, which shows all the potential, all the possibility, is also very useful. But we're shifting, and there's different aspects of what we're testing with DNA, right? So it's not just who's there, it's how they're expressing. A lot of times people do the DNA, I won't say who, but people do DNA testing and they just get all the attributes and they say like, these attributes are here so it can do this. And it's like, is that epigenetically active right now? Are those minerals present in the soil? Because your soluble test won't tell you if they are or not necessarily. It just tells you what's solubly there, right? This is the thing, guys. You guys are starting to see it, right? Right. We need to work together to provide the clarity here. And so this is, I've done so much work to create the clarity around this space. But once I start opening it up, what happens is people go, oh, snap. And they have this realization about how, like, how this is like waiting. It's waiting for us to put these pieces together. And they're not complicated. They're just in our community. They're not a university. We're not going to get the information we're talking about here in a university. We're going to get it through the rich, cared for garden soils, the protected, conserved bioregions that are still fertile and still native. We're going to be getting it from those spaces. And so you're going to have some unbelievable grandmother who has been doing composting for 45 years, who's got a funky recipe, funky grandma, and she's going to be like, oh, well, I've been doing it. And their grandson's like testing it and is like, grandma, do you realize how good your compost is? She's like, oh, well, it's a lot of it has to do. And then she's got like some crazy recipe. Because I don't know if you guys were with me at Our Future. When you hear like Michael, you know, talk about his like, you know, like old New York grandmother, and he's getting like the spoon and like the fish that's in the fridge, the fish scraps that have been in the fridge for a year, and he's spooning it. It's like, whose prep is that? That sounds like FAA, but not FAA. And right, there's all these things that are like waiting to come to the fore, that if we open the door, we start involving community, there's all this stuff that's going to come out of the woodwork. My discoveries and innovations, for most people, feel like they've come out of the woodwork. I'm ready for it. There's more. I see like glimmers of things too. Like, I know that area is going to explode. I know that area is going to explode. I mean, rhizophagy, that's going to explode. I mean, the fact that like that's the real reason compost tea is good. Whoa. Like, and meanwhile, up until James F. White in America, we didn't even look at that. It's like we are entering completely new territory, and it's so exciting because we haven't even been trying. Like, in terms of like growing food, in terms of like actually trying to like restore the earth, we haven't even begun because we didn't even have the evolutionarily like synergized partnerships with the plants. We literally didn't even have the whole plant going in. So how could we even be restoring anything? So we're there. We have the pieces. We have the understanding. We have the solid foundation. That's what I've done. I've cleared the debris, created the clarity for the foundation. But together, in community, in feedback, in conversation with nature and each other, we're going to find out all the rest. And all the nuance, all the complexity is going to stack on top of that strong foundation. Because I went down to the first principles at work, why soil works the way it works. How did soil arrive here? How do plants work in nature? How do they cycle their nutrients in nature? And once we go back there, it all simplifies. So I'm so excited for what is next. What other questions do you guys have? What do you say about dark septite endophytes? I love them. If you check out my book, Regenerative Soil, you can do a recipe and grow them. I hope that you check out that book. It is a wonderful place to start. And I really think that all these areas, because, I mean, like, for instance, DSEs, go try to buy some DSEs. Go. Try to buy some dark septate endophytes to be your control as your, like, guiding sample. What? Why can't you find them? What's going on? Matt! No, okay, I'll tell you. So they can't isolate them. They can identify that they're there. They can't isolate them. So again, We have to take a lot of like, we have to read into what they're saying, how they're saying it, and how they're sometimes intuiting things. Someone like wrote me like this comment on my recent soil food web cycling video, the test in amoeba with the nematode in its mouth. And it closes at the end, right? It looks like it closes at the end and the thing's struggling to get out. So it was open, just like we see in the ocean, where it allows things in that closes on it, right? And so if you think about it, testated amoeba is like a bread basket, and then it comes in, it starts eating from the bread basket, and then it closes on them, right? And it makes a lot of sense. I was saying it like that. And they're sessile. They're not moving around. Like, they're not like moving. We don't see testated amoeba like moving across the screen. And it's well established. And someone like wrote being like, in 1985, someone like wrote a paper about how like testated amoeba like go around hunting nematodes and biting off their tails because they theorized, because they were missing tails, that that's the only thing that could go eat their tail. Meanwhile, there's all these different things that happen where microbes are digesting spores, and then the spores sporulate in their digestion and come out through their rear end, and then they're trailing it. We see this with bears sometimes, with worms. So there also could be that happening too. There's a lot of things that parasitize nematodes. But they were like, this paper, and you go check out the paper, there's no pictures. It's all conjecture. It's their imagination. And it's that's the thing. When there's no picture, when there's no video, and these guys have no one above them to check on what they're going to do, they just write in whatever, and none of us can verify it. And this is the Harvard studies that keep coming out, that they keep being like, oh, that's not real. Yeah, 60% of psychology isn't real. It's like, whoa. Yeah. And so it's really important that we make things replicable and seeable. So you actually can like show people instead of just saying, take my word for it, because that ain't science. Take my word for it is not science. So yeah, no, I really feel strongly that we need to do more work. Again, we need to, like dark septendophytes, yeah, I love them. I have a recipe for getting them, but only because we've done those recipes and tested them and found them, rather than like isolated them out, created a prep, and then did them. We're pulling them off of plants that are already, so they're already in the plant. So we're not scaling them and adding them to plants and then verifying that they're there. Not there yet. Great question. Cutting edge question. I've got them in there. We got a way to get them. But the next steps, this is what I'm talking about, exploration. This is what I'm talking about, community, because it's in building this out together that we'll figure all those extra details out. Is Regen Labs doing DNA testing and sequencing as you describe? I don't know Regen Labs in particular. I only know a few people who do nanopore. It's like me, William, and I believe, yeah, Mandy, Alan. Well, did Alan switch? I don't know, guys. You have to check on Alan Rockefeller if he switched. Alan loves the big machine. But Mandy and he are like our partners, so I'm assuming that he shifted. So, yeah, I'll ask her later. I was talking to her this morning for like 2 hours. That's the thing, is our community is very close. We're all sharing information. We're all helping each other, because that's the only way that we get ahead now. I've done all the reading of the past stuff. I figured out all those different things. They're like, you didn't read this. It's like, you didn't use this test. You didn't, right? Right? I already did that. And so now it's moving forward. It's equipping people. It's getting people to know what they can do. And once you unlock a person, they don't usually go back to the caged life. When you unlock a person, they go all in. And so I'm really excited about what's next. All right. So I have a question for you all for this t-shirt. And we're going to start with the XL, okay? All right. Here we go. So, and I apologize for like doing like small and medium last time. Folks were like, "What?" Sorry. So XL, thank you for being here. What's one thing that you learned today that you didn't already know? Something new that you learned today. Blue Jean King says feedback with nature. Thanks, Blue Jean. Thank you for being here. Eli says mycorrhizal pairing with tree planting. Yeah, it's so simple, so easy, but breakthrough. Jeremy P says there is a company in the US doing sap analysis now called New Age Laboratories. That's awesome. That's awesome. But are they doing it the way they do in the Netherlands? Because if they're doing it the Cornell way, it's not real. Everyone's super disappointed with Cornell right now because they're like, we did the plants out of it, and it's not real. And so people are like, ugh, we still have to go to the Netherlands. So I hopefully they are on it. A new way to look at scientific method, tying back into community and accountability, not just how to do it. Yeah. I love that, Vanessa. Vanessa, I want to send you this. Is XL the one that you would like, Vanessa? If it's not the large, the other one, we can make preferences here. That's okay, cool. All right, wonderful. All right, it's perfect. This is Vanessa's. All right, thank you all for being here. We can create hemp canvas rolls for superior landscape fabric, Aaron Ash. Yes. Selvita soil test knew about Haney soil test. Love hemp in our cover crops. Yeah. We are importing hemp, not exporting. Yeah, I'm sorry for folks. Ooh, yeah. This is the thing. We've got weird laws that make no sense unless you're trying to restrict the ability for the people to make a regenerative living and build communities. And so we need to have community come back, and it's the independence of a community that determines its political power and its actual influence over the political representatives. So we need to bring that back. And then I'll, of course, cut out, the money out of politics, that whole thing. Yep. So yeah, we got some work to do there, but thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of it. We really have all the tools. It's just that they're in us, if that makes sense. Like it's in all of us. It's not in one of us, it's in all of us. So it's like Aaron doing his part. It's Stephanie, it's Kevin, it's Scott, it's Marcus, it's Anthony, it's all of us together doing our part. That's what I said earlier on with William Padilla Brown. He's got his work to do. He's not going to do my work. But that's the whole point, though, is it's such a big space that we really need you. We really need you. All right. What's one thing for the large t-shirt? What's one thing that because of today that you are now committed to doing? Like, you know what? I'm doubling down on my mycorrhizal inoculant. I'm doubling down on my microscopy. I'm getting that lumen unit. What are you going to take action on now? Stephanie says, saving for a microscope. I love it. I love it. Blue Jean King says, home compost testing kits. Yeah. Jeremy P says, I'm still committed to getting the microscope and MinION, but already was. Ah, I love it. I love it. Blue Jean says, taking your courses. Thank you so much, Blue Jean. See and try different methods of microscopy than just bright field. Yes. There's something that happens when, like I mentioned in the talk earlier, dark field. It's the same space. You haven't changed the slide. But now everything is different. There's like a tone change. There's you realize, oh, this is what they experience. The blasted out bright field light, they don't experience that. But the nematodes are like, right? They don't like that. Dark field, it's dark, just like in the soil it is. And there's diffuse light, just like there is when the sun's out. Because remember those soil particles, what do they look like? They look like glass, so they can refract. What do plant roots look like? They look like fiber optic cables, so they transmit light. But it's all indirect. So it's just like dark field. So it does look like interstellar space in the soil to them, not just us. When we look at dark field, that's closest we can get to them. And that's why the color in dark field is so true to life. When you look at a chunk of wood that's partially biocharred, it looks like wood. It's the color. It's color correct. So use those other methods. And then if you can get epifluorescence, oh my word, the whole world will open up to you. Oh my gosh, that's the game changer. Exploring more areas for IMOs. Eli, yes, yes. Lynn says, I'm going to keep on keeping on. Yes, Lynn. I'm gonna send you this, Lynn. I'm going to send you this t-shirt. Thank you for being here. Sometimes that's what we have to do. We just got to keep going. We got to keep enduring because the world will wear you down. But it's in community. It's finding strength with each other that allows us to do all this work. It really is the truth. The thing is, it's like without community, all those other engines, all those other things just don't happen. So let's keep on keeping on. Let's be in community. Let's grow together. Thank you for being here. I appreciate all of this. Yes, Kevin. Yes, send me some of your microscopy images. Josie, biochar and learning about inoculating seeds and trees. Thank you for being here, Josie. And thank you, Josie, for sending me those pigeon peas. I'm so excited to get those in. They grow 12 to 14 feet tall, and they're going to act as that tall shade and windbreak in my food forest where, you know, there's tornadoes that happen here. So the winds are crazy. So I need as much windbreak as possible. That's why I put in the fencing this week and the cattle panels. So thank you for being here. Thank you all for being part of the community. I know you all. I know Dead Folk Flower. I sent you something in the mail. I know Crystal Carter so well. She's one of my amazing students. Someone who's taken everything that I've given her and then exponentially applied it to herself and done all the work beyond and then now is a community leader. She's in a community leader, a community exemplar, and innovating. So great to see so many of you. I am so happy with how today went. I hope that you enjoyed it. I hope that you join us next week, and I'll have the replay up on Saturday. Thank you for being part of this community. I'm Matt Powers. Grow abundantly, learn daily, and live regeneratively. I will see you all next time. Y'all are unmuted. Have a good one.
Thank you, Matt. Have a great That's evening.
Good. Have a good evening.
Thanks, everyone.
Hey, awesome. Awesome.